Roundhouse Radio at blogtalkradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWP Radio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leno and Will TLD Vapidez.
Hello, wrestling fans, and welcome to the debut episode of Wrestling's Week That Was. I'm your host, Joel the Man O'Brien, coming to you live from the land down under, Sydney, Australia. And I'm here to give you my two cents on all the pro wrestling news coming out of the week that was for at least an hour and a half. But remember, you can join the conversation anytime you like by calling me on 760-888-5749. Or you can tweet me as well. At Wrestling R Break, capital W, capital R, capital B. Well, I'm here. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Jay Leno, for helping me get this start on the radio waves. It's incredible to be here, to even think that I'd be starting my own radio show. I'm a big fan of Brian Alvarez's Figure Four Weekly, and I have been for many, many years, and I've always thought it'd be cool to have my own radio show, and it was about a month ago that Jay Leno was like, would you like to start your own radio show? And I was like, why not? This is a great opportunity to talk wrestling, talk the week that was, and, you know, discuss with you fans what's going on. So here we are. I thought we might just talk about what are we going to be dealing with this kind of show? Like, how are we going to be talking about things? Well, it's a simple breakdown of everything that's gone on in WWE primarily. So Raw, SmackDown, bit of main event if there's something worth talking about. Definitely NXT this week. Of course, the big news coming out of the week is NXT TakeOver. We're going to go through that show, all the great matches. There were some amazing matches. And if you haven't watched that show yet, then what are you doing? You can download this later on. Download this later and watch that show. It was an amazing show. But, we're going to go through a few things. We're going to talk about the podcasts of the week as well. I think it's really important that we look over the podcasts, because, like JR's, Austin's, Jericho's, and I'll be talking about why that's so important in this day and age, where there's so many wrestling websites talking about news and whatnot. And then we're going to talk about matches of the week. There's a few matches that I've been watching from the vault that we should check out. So it's going to be a fun hour and a half of radio show. So let's just go on this journey. Let's start with a little bit of information about me. So I am Joel the Man O'Brien. Why am I Joel the Man O'Brien? Sounds like a really lame name, and that has been a lame nickname for quite some time. I was a huge Nintendo 64 fan, and I loved the old THQ, WrestleMania 2000, WWF No Mercy. And before you knew it, me and my friend had started up, you know, our own characters. It was a ridiculous version of me with a bandana and the Godfather's vest and tattoos, which I have none of, by the way. And I call myself Joel the Man O'Brien. And it's kind of stuck ever since. And I've been a wrestling fan for 18 years. You're going on for quite some time. I was born in the Attitude Era, as most of us listening are. Probably, hopefully, some older fans that lived through the 1980s and the 1990s, which I'm incredibly jealous of. As I watch more historical wrestling, it's just like, my God, there's so much great stuff that was going on during that era that I wish I grew up with. But hey, I grew up in the Attitude Era. I grew up with Austin, Rock, Taker. That's still a great amount of great talent to, influence. I remember my first memories of wrestling was like watching Vader versus one of the Los Pericas. One of the Los Pericas, that really terrible Puerto Rican tag team faction unit that they had in the 1990s. Really, really bad. But I remember being at my friend's house very late at night. Couldn't sleep because he was snoring so loudly. And back in Australia, I mean, like, we don't have cable. We don't have Raw every Monday night. It's all pay TV. You know, most of us don't have pay TV, but there was always like an hour of television late at night. And we always used to have this hour of television called WWF Superstars. And I remember turning it on one night. I was so tired, but I couldn't sleep, so I watched this, and I watched Vader squash one of the Los Pericas, and I was like, man, that's so cool. And then my friend already had the WCW video games, and from there on, it was on. My first pay-per-view was SummerSlam 1998, The Highway to Hell. God, the AC/DC track, that was so cool. And, ever since then, I just started creating a love affair with pro wrestling that is 18 years strong to this day. I remember having hardcore matches with my friend at his house, and we had this fake, terrible WWF championship belt. And I remember hating it because it had the old WWF logo, and it was just crap, but it was the coolest thing ever because it was the first ever belt that we had, and we fought over it. I remember having wrestling matches at school where we had the Hardcore Championship, and that was like in 2000, so that, if you remember the Hardcore Championship, it was defended 24/7. And as a kid, that was the coolest thing ever. Now, as we're a bit older, that was a ridiculous concept that diminished the title, but whatever, that's fine. When I was a kid, we had that hardcore stipulation on the championship, so I was like, I was the champion, I was attacked at school, and we had these, like, had people that were assigned the referees, and God, that was crazy. I was like a three-time WWE champion by the time I left high school, so there we go. And, like, the only way I saw Raw, because I didn't have pay TV, is I actually had to tape trade. I had to, like, I am in a situation where I didn't have a tape. I gave my friend, like, $10, and he'd tape me Raw for, like, a month. And he'd give it to me every Tuesday, because, you know, we're ahead of time in the States. If you're listening to us live from the States, hello, United States. But, yeah, we're ahead of time, so on Tuesday morning, Tuesday afternoon, I usually get the tape and watch it all, you know, rewatch it all during the week. And so, yeah, that's how it's all started for me. And here I am. I'm a feature columnist now on ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. Thanks again to Jay Aletta for giving me the chance. And I'm the architect behind Wrestling's Weekly Rope Break. So claim to fame. I've done a four-part series on Triple H. Please go over there and check it out, ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. And scroll down, you'll find me on the front page and check out my writings, and hopefully you enjoy them. Favorite matches? I've got three really, really good matches. I think it kind of defined me as a fan. Flair and Steamboat. Ric Flair, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat from 1989. 2 out of 3 falls match from New Orleans. If you guys are true wrestling fans and you haven't watched that match, that is an incredible 55 minutes of wrestling where you watch the match, and even by the time you get to the end of the match, you don't even realize that 55 minutes has passed. It's incredible. Just the emotion, the drama, the story that they told in that ring, that physical story, is something that, you know, sometimes is lacking in wrestling these days. And go check it out. Kurt Angle, Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 21. Again, like, Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle just came to the plate that night. And it was already a hyped up match at WrestleMania 21. And let's talk about a match that over delivered. Like, just incredible. Incredible match. And then, of course, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Stunning Steve Austin. Not Stone Cold Steve Austin, but Stunning Steve Austin from the Clash of the Champions in 1994. Now, that's a match that you wouldn't really know unless you really kind of dug deep for it. But it was on the Legacy of Stone Cold Steve Austin DVD that is probably hard to get now. But I think if you could YouTube it somewhere, or if you've got the WWE Network, you might actually have it, because the Clash of the Champions is, I think they're all on the WWE Network. So that is, wow. It has a stipulation where if Austin lost the match, he could lose the championship by disqualification or count out. And you think that's a lame stipulation in 2014, because it's usually used so badly. But in this match, like, God, you're like, they use it to its fullest potential in the story that they tell. And Austin as this awesome technical heel, because he's just incredible. You don't really think of Austin as a technical wrestler, but in this match, like, wow, he matches Steamboat move for move. So there's this matches that kind of define me as a fan, so if you guys want to check them out, by all means, head over and check them out. So let's get into the bread and butter of the show. Let's just start from the top stories of the week. So it's top story time. Let's go into it. Obviously, the big story coming out of this week, which will be happening tomorrow night, is the Payback, WWE Payback, coming live from Chicago. Everyone's kind of a little bit down on the pay-per-view and how it's kind of been built up, but I'm kind of excited about it, to be honest. Be sure to check out the predictions, the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse predictions article that was produced by Aaron. Thank you very much, Aaron, for including me in that. That was a lot of fun to do. That goes into my predictions in length, but very quickly, I'll just go over what I think is going to be the best matches on the show. I mean, Evolution versus Shield, what can you say? I mean, that's just been a tremendous, tremendous rivalry and a tremendous program for all involved. The Shield have just come out of this smelling like roses, and like as if there was going to be any doubt that they were. So Shield's going to go over there. Bray and Cena, that's been an up-and-down rivalry. We'll discuss it as the show goes on. But Cena to win, I mean, they've gone on for long enough. This is almost a three-month rivalry. It's been booked questionably, is the best way to put it, but Cena has to win. It's just, you know, the babyface in a heel versus babyface program, that goes that long, babyface has to win to save face. So, of course, we've got the segment involving Bryan. Is he going to give up his championships? I mean, is that a prediction? I guess... Yeah, he's going to give him up. I mean, it's Brie Bella, it's his wife. I like the drama that's been added to that match, I like that whole situation. I think that's really, really cool. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting thing to see how it plays out. Hopefully they don't overbook it, and it's just simple, and it's just well done. Yes, by the way, look out for an article I will be writing about Daniel Bryan's first month as WWE World Heavyweight Champion on PWP.com. Coming out probably sometime next week, just discussing the his last month. It has not been the best month for one Daniel Bryan, so check that article out coming up. Recently added on SmackDown was Rusev versus Big E. If you watch Raw, that was obviously predicted. Going to be good to see these two bulls lock horns and have a bit of a rough up. I like Rusev. I think he's a real he's got a really great upside, and he's got a great look. His theme music is freaking awesome. It's so old school foreign heel gimmick. It always goes well if it's not overused, and we haven't seen it in a while. So, Big E, what the hell has happened to Big E, ladies and gentlemen? What has happened to Big E? That guy has gone from, like, the top, like, on the cusp of becoming something big in his matches with Randy Orton. Do you remember those before WrestleMania? Was it before WrestleMania he was wrestling Randy Orton, having those really competitive matches? Now he's just, where is he? He's just absolutely buried. So, Big E, Rusev to win, obviously. Fox versus Paige. I have a lot to say about this. I'm going to save it for the Raw review, because what the hell are they been doing with Alicia Fox and Paige? What the hell? Paige to win. Paige to retain. They'd be stupid to take the title off Paige. Cesaro versus Sheamus. Cesaro, he's on the roll of his life at the moment with Paul Heyman on his side. It's going to be Cesaro as the new United States champion. I mean... In normal situations, the secondary championships, when they're put on guys that are actually getting a lift or a push, it usually doesn't mean the best. I mean, we've seen guys get the Intercontinental Championship, the U.S. Championship, and they've just plateaued. They've plateaued or they've just gone down. But they've given Cesaro, Paul Heyman, Cesaro, every match he's involved in, he's just doing things that are just incredible, that look awesome, that are memorable. This guy, I tell you what, understatement of the year. Keep your eyes on Cesaro. Cesaro to be the new US championship. And he's going to elevate that title in the process. Bad News Barrett versus RVD. I'm expecting a mess. Between RVD and Bad News Barrett. I'm liking Bad News Barrett. Everyone's raving about the gimmick, but really, to be honest, it's a gimmick that I can only see going so far. Eventually, fans are going to get sick of it. Aren't they? Like, it's a bit corny. Barrett's doing the best he can with it. It's getting over to a degree, so let's just be positive about that. Bad news, Barrett, to retain. That's the end of it. And El Torito versus Hornswoggle, El Torito to win. That's it. I don't want to talk about that match. That's just not worth my time. So, other news coming out of the week, TNA was polling at the start of the week on whether or not they should bring back the six-sided ring to TNA Impact. Apparently, they're teasing about debuting that at Slammiversary, which I think is coming up in the next 2 weeks or so. Does it really matter? Was the six-sided ring really, like, revolutionary and different and amazing? Was it really, really that good? I've seen some great matches, like the Unbreakable, I think the 2005 match between Samoa Joe, Christopher Daniels, and AJ Styles. I mean, that was a great match. You look at that match, and I'm like, why couldn't that match have been done just in a four-sided ring? What's the difference? I mean, sure, it's unique, and it differentiates TNA, but, like, at the end of the day, it's just a ring. Like, please, if you disagree with me, give me a call, drop me a tweet. You know, I am going to be here for the next hour and a half. So, does that really change how I feel about TNA if they bring back that six-sided ring? To be honest, not really. I mean, it's the action that happens in the middle of the ring that matters. And at the end of the day, it's just a gimmick. TNA rating from this week, it was 1.8 million. They've been averaging that number for the last 2-3 months now, and it's not looking good. I mean, that number seems all right, but it's the breakdown of the quarters that kind of worry me. I mean, I think last week they did a 2 weeks ago they did a quarter six rating. I just like, wow, that show is on the decline, and they're going to have to do something really drastically to kind of change their prospects at the moment, as far as I'm concerned. So they dropped out of the top 100 shows for the 18 to 49 age demographic, which has been their bread and butter since they started, and they dropped out of it. So Dixie Carter and whoever's taking care of the TNA creator, they're going to have to shape up, because I watched TNA Impact this morning, ladies and gentlemen, and that show, it's a crying shame. But we'll get to that in all due course. Super, super strong reaction coming out of TNA from NXT TakeOver last Thursday night, Saturday morning. Saturday morning, Friday morning. What a show. Guys, if you haven't watched it, stop listening to me right now. You can listen to me later on. My God, what a absolutely incredible show. 2 hours flew by. It was great wrestling. All the matches were given time. Just amazing. And the great news coming out of the post-show is that Triple H was hinting towards August or early September for the next NXT special. And as far as I'm concerned, for Triple H, it's 2 for 2. I mean, both those shows were incredible shows, memorable shows, memorable matches. And, of course, we'll get into the details of that show in due time on Wrestling's Week. Now, at the start of the week, the fans podcast on Twitter did a really actually creative job in trying to decide the worst WWE champion of all time. And they actually came to, drumroll please, The Miz as the worst WWE champion of all time. I mean, I look back, like, I was just thinking about this during the week, like, The Miz, was he really that bad? Was he really horrible? Like, you can't judge Miz's WWE Championship reign on The Miz that we see now. Because The Miz that we see now is an absolute geek. When was the last time he was on WWE television? I was thinking that the other week, too. I can't remember. But I was going to my first WrestleMania at WrestleMania 27, when it was The Miz versus John Cena. Now, call me dumb, call me a stupid fan, but, like, I was looking forward to that match because I thought they did a relatively good job with The Miz. I thought he had a great heat. He had the most heat he's ever had in his career, and it wasn't just because he was associated with the WWE Championship picture. I think he did a really, really good job and stepped up to the plate, and I don't think he was the worst WWE champion of all time. If anything, I think Alberto Del Rio was the worst WWE champion of all time. Now, the guy had good matches, but in no way, shape, or form do you ever remember. Do you remember his WWE Championship reigns? Do you know that he's a 2- or 3-time WWE champion? That's unheard of. And I think a mark of a champion is how well he's remembered by the fans. If he is even remembered as champion. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't remember it at all. So that's my worst WWE champion of all time. What's yours? Because I don't know if everyone joined in the fans podcast and voted, but I don't know if The Miz was. Del Rio's up there with me, but then again, I might have to think about it. But if you, hey, who is the worst WWE champion of all time? Drop me a tweet at WrestlingRBreak, capital W, capital R, capital B, and I know I might share it online if I can. Raw's rating from this week. Guys, it was the lowest Raw rating of the modern era. Now, it was Memorial Day, and Memorial Day doesn't usually give a great rating, but, and they had, you know, considerable competition with Miami Heat game, but, like, it got a 2.6 rating. And I look back on the actual previous ratings of Memorial Day, and from 2010 was a 3.22, 2011 was a 3.07, 2012 was a 2.72, and 2013 was actually 2.8, and now we're back down to 2.6. Now, as far as I'm concerned, the Shield versus the Evolution is a very, very strong program, but you know, it's very, very worrying when WWE starts getting ratings like that. And Raw is like what's holding the pieces together on WWE television. The network hasn't taken off. If you've been under rock for the last, like, you know, 6 months, the WWE network has not lived up to expectations. It's only got 675,000 members when they were actually predicting 1.3. And that's done wonders for the WWE stock. So, you know, all these kind of factors, the ratings, the network, WWE needs to really kind of get things together with their superstars and start pushing new guys. And, like, they are kind of doing that. And, like, you know, they're at the embryonic stage with a lot of the guys. But, you know, 2.6 ratings, not a good rating, even though it was Memorial Day. So watch this space. If you guys have a chance, I mean, it's a little bit out of date, but it's worth checking out the NXT conference call with Triple H. Just him talking 15 minutes talking about NXT and about his ideas and about his relationship with Cesaro. Puts over Cesaro super strong, as he should. And just a few candid on your points about the fact that Bray is, he feels like that Bray is now just getting comfortable with his character, which I think is a fair call. You know, I really think that's fair. What's your opinion on Bray Wyatt? Are we happy with him? Is he plateauing? Is there room for him to grow? I mean, he has grown. He's grown incredibly in the last 6 months, especially promo-wise. And his matches are getting good. So, what's your thoughts on Bray Wyatt? Give me a call. Drop me a tweet. Whatever. So let's get into Raw for the week. Monday Night Raw. Now, this show, it was a good show. I saw a lot of negative comments on Facebook and Twitter. PWP side, all these other websites saying, oh, it's such a bad show. It wasn't really such a bad show. I really enjoyed the start of it. I think I enjoyed the first hour and a half, but, I mean, like, for the last 2-3 weeks, I really felt that it's been a mixed bag show. I mean, the Evolution versus Shield program, I think, is pronounced. When you've got a well-built team like the Shield versus a well-established team like Evolution, Orton, Batista, Triple H, I mean, you can't go wrong, because it's like the unstoppable force meaning the immovable object in regards to these factions. They're the best of the best. And, God, the Backlash match was fantastic. So that's been carrying the show, but the rest of the show, they've been going through bad luck, WWE. I mean, they've lost Daniel Bryan to injury. It did not help that the crowd was dead. The crowd was dead for this whole show. Oh. I think they cared a little bit for the Shield stuff. They're called, actually, it's funny, they stayed quiet for the whole show, but by the time they got to the Shield segment, they immediately started chanting, "This is awesome." I was like, okay. One of the most overused chants in wrestling at the moment, "This is awesome." But that's another subject for another matter. The Bryan title situation. I actually don't mind them dragging this out and making a segment out of it for the pay-per-view. You know, it creates intrigue, because you really think, is Daniel Bryan actually going to drop the championship? Like, someone suddenly has to give. He's either got to lose the championship, or his wife's got to get fired. I mean, I love it. I think that's really, really cool. It's really, really cool. It creates intrigue for the pay-per-view. And I think the drama's there. The fans are behind Daniel Bryan, so they'll make the segment. They'll be in Chicago, so regardless, Bryan should get a superstar reaction. Let's just hope they don't overbook it. Keep it simple. Don't throw a screw job to the problem. You know, either Brie gets fired or drops the championship. I mean, there's some great drama being created. And for the fans that are freaking out about Daniel Bryan getting injured, I was one of the fans initially that was like, oh my God, his momentum is going to be gone. Some of the best stories that I've witnessed have been injury stories and come back and won the championship. Triple H, Madison Square Garden, 2002. That was a terrible moment, and he won the championship at WrestleMania. I still remember that to this day. Daniel Bryan is just going to be like that tenfold. Fans are behind him, so let's just chill out. We'll be fine. Speedy recovery for Daniel Bryan in the meantime. The Shield segment, I think the go-home segment, is one of the weaker segments for the Shield and Evolution, but really, I think, what more can you do? I mean, this rivalry is coming to a head. The heels laid them out. Heels laid out the baby faces, put Roman Reigns to a table. It was cool. It's poetic. They did a sign. It was good. I mean, you can't really ask for anything more for a go-home segment. It was good. I am looking forward to this. I've emphasized this throughout the show. Oh, my God. That's going to be a great match. If you haven't seen it yet, I'm sure there's a bootlegged copy of the Extreme Rules match between Shield and Evolution. That was an amazing match. Really great match. They're going to be in Chicago again, ladies and gentlemen. If you remember anything from Payback last year, Punk and Jericho. Whew, what a match. What a crowd. So it's going to be really, really good atmosphere for this one. Now, Bray Wyatt. Guys, girls, what is Bray Wyatt? Is he a babyface or is he a heel? Now, JR's been bringing this up in his podcasts for the last 3 or 4 weeks. The mannerisms and the subject matter that Bray Wyatt utilizes is all babyface stuff. It's like he comes to the ring, he lights his lantern, comes to the ring, he says the name of the town for a cheap pop, and he comes out with cheers. And it's like, well, he's been meant to be the antagonist. He's telling everyone that John Cena is this fake prophet, and he's all about lies, he's not real. And it's like, John Cena is one of the most polarizing characters in WWE. Yes, I'm stealing Michael Cole's line, because it is true, he's one of the most polarizing characters in WWE. And you put him in a rivalry with Bray Wyatt, where you want to push him as the complete antagonist. Now, that's a challenge in itself, when you have someone as cool as Bray Wyatt. WWE is making their job twice as hard when they give him promos like they gave him on Raw last Monday night. That was a full-fledged babyface promo. If you haven't seen it, go and watch it. He's talking about the working man and how they come home and how they work hard for their money and how John Cena is fake and how he's real and a god. And it was a hell of a promo, I'll tell you what, but is he a babyface or a heel? Now, they backed it up with what I thought was a very effective heel segment where they took out Jerry Lawler and JBL, got clotheslined to hell and all that stuff, and John Cena came out to defend Jerry Lawler, but come on, like, what are we meant to think out here? Are we meant to think Bray is a babyface or a heel? Because right now, he's on that cool anti-hero phase like Austin and Rock were. Now, they're nowhere near ready for him to be babyface, but I tell you what, the content that they're giving Bray, the way he's delivering it, and the structure of his entrance and everything is babyface oriented. They need to decide what he is and go with it and run with it, and not just be enamored with the fact that, oh, he's got the whole world in his hands chant, and everyone's singing it. That's cool, but come on, they've got to cut that out, cut him saying that out, and bring him back to being a heel. Because I think he'll be an effective heel, you know, but they've just got to wash it. Brad Maddox has been fired as GM of Raw. That sucks, but no, it really doesn't suck. Why am I bringing this up? Why is this an important subject to bring up? Right now in WWE, there's a problem where good wrestlers that could deserve a bit of story time, deserve a bit of character development, are now just stereotypical geeks. Sandow, Ryder, all those people. They're great wrestlers, but now they're just plateauing and they're absolute just uses a cannon fodder. I think they need to bring back the geeks. Bring back the Geek Patrol. Guys like Brad Maddox. I think Brad Maddox should be the stereotypical heel geek guy for WWE and for the upcoming superstars. You know? Feed this to a Sheamus. Feed Max to Sheamus or to Mysterio or whatever, or to babyfaces, to make them look good without having to be forced into a situation where you have to use a guy who's on the rise, and then someone has to lose. You know, like there should be a geek squad, and I think Maddox should lead it. Maddox, I think he has enough heat on him to be an effective geek guy, but we'll soon see. So that's just an idea. Do you think we should have a complete like squash team of wrestlers that just go out there and get squashed? Not Titus O'Neil, who's got a ton of promise. Not Damian Sandow, who's actually great on the mic. We just have guys whose job is to legitimately just lose. They come into the company, and that's their job. Instead of just, like, stop-starting pushes with Sandow and Ryder and these other people. Bad News Barrett was on commentary on Monday night, doing, I think it was the Cesaro-IVD match. God, that guy's talented. He is just so talented. Why isn't he, like, a WWE champion, or had at least a challenge for the championship? God, he's so talented. That guy has a lifelong job at WWE, even though if he gets injured or wrestling doesn't work out for him for some reason. Tell you what, He is a ton of talent, worth checking out. Summer Rae. I wanted to say this last week because it was much more prominent last week, just with her mannerisms and charisma. God, she gets it. Summer Rae really, really gets it. And before I saw the NXT show with Charlotte and Natty, I was like, this girl is the next big thing. And then I saw Charlotte wrestle, and I was like, wow. But anyway, I'll get to that. But yes, God, she gets it. And she's smoking on. That's just pointing it out there. She's just incredible. And I think she's got the greatest potential since Trish Stratus, really. Remember, everybody, Trish Stratus started as an absolutely bottom-feeding crap wrestler. She was at the bottom of the barrel. She's crap. Then she became one of the greatest women wrestlers of my generation that I watched. I wasn't privy to the Japanese wrestling, but anyway, that is that. Rhodes and Orton Orton Batista versus the Rhodes brothers. Great match. Oh, solid tag team match. But then again, what do you expect from the Rhodes brothers? Very much like The Undertaker, or Undertaker was until this year. But, you know, like, wow. Great match. What a finish. The disaster kick into an RKO in midair. A thing of beauty. Randy Orton, the king of timing in that ring. Check that match out. Really, really awesome match. To be honest, I really love the final build for Sheamus and Cesaro. The whole handshake storyline and then the heel beatdown of Sheamus was just great. I mean, I love it. I personally love it when a heel viciously beats down another babyface after, say, a competitive match like the match that happened between Del Rio and Sheamus. I loved it. I thought it was really, really cool. And Cesaro hits him in the neutralizer and then shakes his hand. Like, that's just cool stuff. And I think they've done a really, really good job of building that match up, actually, for a mid-card pay-per-view match. Felt like an old-school 1998 pay-per-view match. So I'm looking forward to the match. Should be good. Everyone's down on board, but Bo Dallas. Everyone's predicting Bo Dallas not to get anywhere. There's something about Bo Dallas, guys. There's something about Bo Dallas that screams longevity. He may not be the best wrestler, and we're nowhere near seeing his potential, but I think the smarmy, sarcastic heel, I think it could work for Bo Dallas. He's got something that just rings like, God, you're just an irritating bastard. Listen, when Damien Sandow first started, but I'll still go with it. When Damien Sandow first started, I thought, my God, this is a terrible gimmick. I turned the corner on Damien Sandow within like 2-3 months. And then WWE just pulled the rug out from under him. And then we just didn't have Damien Sandow anymore. We have, what's his name? God, Davy Crockett, whatever that rubbish was. I'm getting to that in a second. Poor Alberto Del Rio. My God. What has happened to Del Rio? He's just nothing. He's an absolute nothing guy who can wrestle. He had a great, great physical match with Sheamus and wrestled really greatly, but God, that crowd did not care. That was just, it was like a TNA Impact taping. There was just no noise. My God. What has happened to Del Rio? He was on the cusp of being something great, and they just... I don't know. Guys, what do you think about Del Rio? Give me a call. Drop me a text. You know, let's talk about this thing. Finally, let's just talk about Alicia Fox and this build towards the Women's Championship. This is my last Raw report. I'm going to get on to NXT TakeOver. What have they done with Alicia Fox? Now, I like the character. I like the whole idea, but she's nuts, and she does all this crazy stuff after the match. But at the end of the day, she's wrestling for the Divas Championship on Sunday. And she's lost every single match. She only got this championship match because she beat Paige in a one-on-one match, and then she's lost every single match after that. What a great challenger! Does anyone think that she's actually going to win the championship on Sunday? Don't argue about the fact that she has to lose because she chucks her spasms after the match. Come on. Like, she did the same when she won. Like, what's the difference? I think she's wrestling for a championship at the end of the day. Come on. You know, like... At the end of the day, she's a challenger for a championship. Let's just go on to NXT TakeOver. Remember, if you want to call me or talk Raw or NXT or anything pro wrestling on your mind, call me on 760-888-5749 or tweet me at WrestlingRBreak. A capital R, capital W, capital B. We can chat and go on from there. Okay, guys. NXT TakeOver. And girls, if you're listening. NXT TakeOver. What a show. That was, awesome show. Was it as good as NXT Arrival? I'd say yes. I think it was better than NXT Arrival. I mean, Cesaro and Zayn, I'm a little bit partial to NXT Arrival because Cesaro and Zayn was just an incredible match. That's probably my match of the year at the moment. I love that match, and I'm partial to the show because of that. But NXT TakeOver had a lot of good to great matches across the board. I think all the marquee matches they just hit the mark, knocked the ball out of the park. I thought the whole overall presentation of the show reeked like a mini WrestleMania. The video about Change and TakeOver and how they had the transition shots of the Wyatts and Shield and Big E. That was really, really cool. Great music. The video packages all over the show were fantastic. If you haven't had a chance, check out the Sami Zayn one and Natalya Natty. Stuff they did with Heart vs. Flair. Oh my god, that was so cool. And like, they treated the number one contendership match between Sami Zayn and Tyler Breeze with such respect. They gave a video package for each guy, showing their road to the championship match, what they could bring to the table. They showed the characters so well. It was just, overall, Triple H, as the executive producer of the show, holy crap, he just did a masterful job of making all these matches feel important. So, hats off to him. Didn't have the best start, to be honest. I mean, Rose versus Camacho, I haven't followed the rivalry. I'm just starting to get back in NXT in the last week or so. That hasn't lit my world on fire. Adam Rose, listen, this guy, he screams. If you want to talk about some guy who's not going to last, Adam Rose is not going to last in WWE. I'm sorry. His in-ring skill set is lacking. I'm sorry. And Camacho, he looked impressive physically, but, you know, in the match, it was a mess. The Ascension versus LL Cal and Kalisto. I was expecting a lot from the old Samurai Del Sol. For you indie-rific listeners out there, of course, you know who Samurai Del Sol is. He's an awesome match. If you guys want to check out a match involving Samurai Del Sol, check his matches with NXT Sami Zayn or El Generico. El Generico versus Samurai Del Sol. I think they had a series of matches like 2 or 3 years ago. 2 or 3 years ago. Check it out on YouTube. They have some great matches. He's got a great following, and I was expecting a lot out of this match. I know it's still the Ascension, but, you know, there was nothing really in this match. They got squashed. It was glorified squash, and the Ascension looked strong. Who the hell are going to challenge the Ascension now? So, I don't know. Yeah, it just kind of left a sour taste in my mouth. Zayn versus Breeze. Once that match hit and that match finished, it really felt like an NXT special show. That match built slowly, showed a lot of skill. Tyler Breeze, I tell you what, I heard someone talking about this during the week about how Tyler Breeze, I think he's trained by Lance Storm at Lance Storm's wrestling school in Canada, and I heard a lot of good things about him, but we hadn't really seen the best of Tyler Breeze. Well, I think this match kind of started showing the best of Tyler Breeze. It was a really beautifully built match. It peaked nicely. Even that spot where Sami Zayn tried to throw that new powerbomb, it didn't hit initially, but when he finally hit that, the crowd just popped beautifully. It built nicely. Sami Zayn loses again. Now, of course, it makes sense that Tyler Breeze being the heel goes on to versus Neville, who's still the champion, but what do we do with Tyler Breeze? Sorry, not with Tyler Breeze, with Sami Zayn. He's lost all his matches. Now, does anyone remember? Cyber Sunday, started going crazy about the fact that he couldn't be world champion, became a very, very good heel. Is that where Sami Zayn's headed? I'm not sure, but that match was a really, really good match. Did exactly what it needed to do at that point of the show. Mojo Rawley got absolutely squashed by Rusev, absolutely squashed. Now, he featured on NXT Arrival and was actually prominently featured. What the hell happened? I mean, Rusev is the WWE guy, and he's on the rise, but really, did they have to absolutely kill Mojo Rawley? I know, apparently they're going to be continuing this on the NXT taping, but we just saw the babyface got absolutely his ass handed to him. What the hell? That was interesting. Charlotte versus Natalya. Guys, girls, what an incredible, incredible match. Completely out of the blue. I did not expect this in the slightest. We all knew Charlotte was athletic. We all knew Natalya could wrestle. But my God, did Natalya work her ass off and give Charlotte her best match ever. We had a great video package. They had Bret Hart, Ric Flair at ringside. The drama was there. It was a submission-heavy match, and I was very surprised, but all the submissions came up beautifully. If anyone knows anything about wrestling, submission wrestling is the best way to entice drama into a match, and, like, the girls nailed it. Natalya's face selling Charlotte's submission holds was just a thing of beauty. She's close to tears. Charlotte knew NXT Women's Championship. The championship got over. Ric Flair was crying. Charlotte was crying. What a moment. What a moment. Like, that's things that, that kind of define a show. Those kind of matches. I mean, they gave it time as well. It wasn't rushed like it was on Raw, like they only have 10 minutes. I think they gave them like 10, 15 minutes. It felt long. It was great. It was just perfect length. Guys, go out of your way to watch this match. It was... It reminded me of the Gail Kim, Taryn Terrell matches. You know, those matches came out of the blue, and everyone was like, Taryn Terrell, the former Tiffany from WWE, God, she can't wrestle. You saw that match, the Last Man Standing match between Gail Kim and Taryn Terrell in TNA. Check it out if you haven't seen it. That was awesome. Charlotte versus Natalya, I'd say better. Great match. Then we had Tyson Kidd versus Adrian Neville. It lived up to the hype, guys. Great match. Really, really great match. Great technical bout. Old school mat wrestling, flips, dives, the whole thing. They played a really good story about the fact that the mirror equals. At the end of the day, Adrian Neville won the match. I really felt that the fans lost interest during the match. I think that hurt the match, to be honest. They weren't really into the near falls as much as I thought they would be with the Zayn and Breeze match. But they're going to continue the story with Tyson Kidd. I wouldn't mind seeing another rematch. Two out of three falls, anyone? Apparently it's NXT's specialty, so I think that would be the next logical step to go with Tyson Kidd and Adrian Neville. And Pac is a freak. I was at Dragon Gate, WrestleMania 28 weekend at Dragon Gate, front row, and I saw Pac versus Loki. And guys, tell you what a match. That was good. And he's a great he's a great wrestler. Met the guy too. He's a really nice guy. So main event and SmackDown thoughts coming out of Friday's show and Wednesday's show. Why do we review main event? I always just check it out, but there's been some really outstanding matches on main event. AJ versus Natalya from main event before AJ left. That was a great, great women's match. Evidence that the women's division's growing. Paige, Natalya, Charlotte's one of the most athletic women I've seen in a long time. Keep your eyes on the NXT Women's Division and the WWE Women's Division. It's growing. It's good. Summer Rae's good, too. But, yeah, main event has some great matches that we should always just kind of keep your eye out for, you know? Cesaro versus Kofi Kingston for the U.S. Championship. Whew, that was an awesome match, too. This week wasn't as important. I mean, they used the show to kind of continue the Cena-Wyatt rivalry. Good lengthy match between the Usos and the Wyatt family. Wyatt's win, so, you know, hopefully we get a tag title match down the line. The Wyatts are logical next champions in the tag team division, to be honest. They need some new challenges, by the way. And we've got enough guys there that should make some new tag teams to wrestle the champions. Going to SmackDown, a few thoughts coming out of SmackDown, not too many. Roman Reigns, they did the final go-home promo on SmackDown for The Shield, and to be honest, Roman Reigns, just didn't hit it for me. He's got a lot of charisma, but he just really kind of just forced this angry kind of version of himself, and I just didn't really like it. Just didn't like it. So he's got to step up his game on promo-wise. I mean, wrestling's getting better. He just needs to kind of... channel everything and kind of focus on everything because he's got greatness strewn throughout him. He's got a great look. He's just got to focus on things a bit more, especially in regards to his promos. Bit of a missed opportunity with the promos. There was a champion versus champion match on SmackDown, the Wade Barrett versus Sheamus. They did a really, really great job by having these little video packages before the match, or leading up to the match, talking about the former US champions, the former Intercontinental champions. It was really, really good. They showed the former Intercontinental champions of Triple H, Rock, and then they showed the current champion. And really kind of put Bad News Barrett and Sheamus into this league of champions. It was just really short, effective, great little pieces that made for really, really good lead up to the match. And they interviewed both guys. It really made it feel like a big deal. That's what I'm trying to say. So thumbs up all the way for that. The inset primers this week were really good. Yeah, I'm very, very surprised. They every inset primer gave the match a purpose. So Kofi Kingston was trying to reignite his momentum because he actually beat Cesaro in the match that I talked about for the US Championship on Main Event. You know, I think it was about 6 months or a year ago. Here we are. He wants to get back on the horse and, you know, get back into it. Great. Titus O'Neil was wrestling Big E because a month ago, Big E beat Titus and he's angry about it. I'm cool with this. This is good. We should have purposes for matches all the time as far as I'm concerned. So thumbs up for that. A really great showcase match between Kofi and Cesaro in the end. It was a short match, but God, that was really, really good 3-4 minutes. These guys obviously have great chemistry together. Again, if you haven't seen it, go to the main event match between Cesaro and Kofi Kingston for the US Championship. It's awesome. Good match. This match was good too, just a smaller version of that one. Really good. Puts over Cesaro strong for Sunday. Good to see the Divas Champion actually winning her match. I was thinking the way they've been booking Alicia Fox and Paige, that Paige is actually going to lose. Alicia Fox was ringside, distracting the champion. She took the belt. And I just thought Tamina, who was versing Paige, was going to beat Paige. Thank God, Paige wins going into the pay-per-view. I can't say the same for Alicia Fox. How can anyone in their right mind think that Alicia Fox is going to win the Divas Championship? They've completely screwed up the push for both ladies. Yes, Alicia Fox is different. Yes, I know it's just the Divas division, but we shouldn't think like that. We should be thinking that all the programs are important, you know? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Give me a call. Send me a text. Send me a tweet on at Wrestling Outbreak, capital R, capital B, capital W. BMP, yeah. Bad News Barrett and his entrance attire. Now, I like Bad News Barrett, but, like, why is now he was wearing this ridiculous, like tuxedo jacket, and now, remember that used to be his old entrance attire, and he used to have, like, the little rose thing there, and he's like a bare-knuckle fighter from England. Why is he wearing that tuxedo, I always thought? It made no sense. Now he's Bad News Barrett. I'm thinking, okay, cool, he'll just come out in a t-shirt, like, whatever, he doesn't need, like, a fancy robe or something. Now he's got, like a medieval cloak thing with, like, studded shoulder pads, and he throws that off. I'm like, what's this character's fascination with this ring attire? It looks ridiculous. It just doesn't make any sense as far as I'm concerned. But you know, I think he's got to work on that. Just his character's got to come together in that regard, because it doesn't make that makes no sense. Why is he wearing that? Listen, Barrett versus Sheamus was an awesome match. It was a really, really good match. These guys always have really hard physical fights. Like, every clothesline step, every shoulder charge, you can feel it through the screen. Really well put together match here on SmackDown. Really glad of you to see this, guys. Really worth watching. It was Jimmy Uso versus Bray Wyatt in a Last Man Standing match. And took the time and gave Jimmy and Jay promo time. And I tell you what, they came off with a lot of fire. Came off really articulate. Good showing by the Usos in the promo department. Really, really good to see. Zeb Colter was awesome on commentary. He's just in that dirty Dutch mentality. Zeb Colter, what a great, great talent. Very, very entertaining. It looks like WWE's given up on the Adam Rose Jack Swagger match. Didn't make it to the pay per view. So that shows you where Adam Rose is in the WWE's pecking order at the moment. It's not good for Adam Rose. If he's not making it to the pay-per-view on Sunday, it's not looking good. So Jack Swagger loses to Adam Rose in a very, 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 very quick match. Embarrassing loss, whatever. As I said to you before, Adam Rose's future in the WWE is not looking good at the moment, as far as I'm concerned. The main event was a Last Man Standing match between Jimmy Uso and Bray Wyatt. I'm all for, like, Jimmy Uso getting offense and looking strong, but by God, Bray Wyatt's going into Payback and he's versing John Cena in a Last Man Standing match. Jimmy Uso had this match won like 3 or 4 times, and the match ended with Bray Wyatt about to lose to Jimmy Uso in a last man standing match when the Wyatts interfere and gave the Bray the opportunity to pick up the win and take out Jimmy Uso. I tell you what, that's a questionable booking decision in regards to Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt, I don't care if Bray Wyatt quote-unquote beat John Cena at Extreme Rules in that bogus cage match. Bray Wyatt needs all the help he can get going into Payback this Sunday. And putting him in that match and giving Jimmy Uso all that offense, not good, ladies and gentlemen, not good at all. I tell you what, I'm all for Jimmy Uso getting some offense, but come on, like, Jimmy Uso doesn't even have a match on the pay-per-view. You gotta balance these things up. It doesn't make any sense. Bray should have squashed him, absolutely killed him, you know, create sympathy that way, you know. And by the way, it was the most timid last man standing match in history. They didn't even use weapons, I don't think. It was just a straight up match. Like a clothesline would get a count. And yes, I shouldn't complain. Good match. Standalone match was good, but you know, Bray Wyatt's fighting Cena on Sunday. He did not look good coming out of it. So guys, we're going to be lining up something that I haven't seen covered that much on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio or on the site in regards to articles. We're going to be talking about TNA Impact every Saturday. Yeah, it's worth talking about, guys. Because I remember a great when TNA Impact used to be great. Now, I started watching it in 2012. I watched matches here and there before that. But I started watching when they had the Bound for Glory series. And when they did it right in that year in 2012. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Google it. You'll probably see maybe a Wikipedia page about it. Or you'll see some YouTube videos about it. They really nailed that, the concept of pro wrestling with the point system and like competitively who's getting the points, who needs to win, the final four. They really nailed it, and it really made me start to love TNA. Really made me start loving the product and the company. I think they got Bruce Pritchard in. Bruce Pritchard, who used to be one of the executive people from WWE, and he came in, and I swear they just changed that creative cycle around. It just really felt like a pro wrestling show and really was going well. And then, I don't know what's happened, but they've just gone downhill and downhill and just gone back to what everyone thinks about TNA. And everyone thinks that TNA is a garbage wrestling promotion that just has no idea what they're doing, and they're stuck in 1999 or 1998. Of course, there's rumors going around that Vince Russo has returned to the helm. Well, it certainly feels like Vince Russo has returned to the helm of TNA, because this show that I watched this morning, I had the privilege of watching, was just a clusterfuck. It was a complete clusterfuck of heels interfering, heels authority figures, you know, babyfaces looking like idiots. Let me go through a few of the points that I picked out of them. Like, for the second month in a row, they've got the storyline where there's this like babyface faction, but the babyface group and a heel group, and it just really feels like no one's getting over in these multi-man programs. Like Eric Young's the World Heavyweight Champion. If you're a casual viewer and you started watching TNA this week, you would have no idea that was the case. Absolutely no idea. No one's getting over in this situation. No one's. I know. I don't know what getting over means, says wrestlers, but I think I do. Everyone's just staying at that one level. JR says that they're being much too like WWE, and I think that much is true. But you can take what WWE does and just simplify it. Like, look at NXT. That's a great example. Look at NXT. NXT is what WWE does, but it's simplified, and it's logical, and it's easy to follow. And it's a great 2 hours or 1 hour of television. TNA in 2 hours, yeah, I've got no idea. You know, people are annoying me. The characters that are meant to be, like, I'm meant to get getting behind, I don't get behind. The crowd's dead. It's just a combination of terrible things, you know. Fans and the fans in the arena, like, they've stopped going from town to town because it's saving money. I understand that. But they're back in the impact zone in Orlando. And I tell you what, crowd just doesn't care. Well, at least on this episode, they didn't care. They were not into anything. I think they were into like the fact that Bully Ray was going to put someone through a table. But even when it happened, I think it was Spud, the Rockstar Spud, who went through the table at the end of the show, midway through the show, I'm not sure. Crowd kind of popped for that. Yeah. It was very. It just made the show look so low rent. It's so dark in the Impact Zone because they don't have anyone in there. Yeah, it's not good at all. You know, and the continuity problems as well. Like, I watched Impact last week, and the Bobby Lashley, Kenny King, MVP union faction, they spent the whole show putting them over. And I'm pretty sure I saw Bobby Lashley spear Davey Richards off the stage through a table. Now, is he back? Is he still injured? No, he's back now. He's back after a week, just wrestling like normal. Oh, he's got his ribs taped up. It's like, come on, guys, sell the injury, you know, like, take him out. Let's do something with Davey, you know, with Eddie Edwards now that he's on his own. Let's put him at a disadvantage. I don't know, God. I'm sitting here and I could think of ways of just making these storylines better. And, like, this whole thing about MVP challenging Eric Young for the championship. This is the problem that you have with, like, authority heel figures. They're in control. They have the ability to make matches, cancel matches, strip champions. Why don't they just strip Eric Young and award the championship to MVP? You know what I mean? Like, there's no logic behind it. It's just ridiculous. Nobody's going to do this long, drawn-out match. I know it's pro wrestling. Stop treating it like it's real. But then those little things start to add up when you're just, like, getting pissed off with a show. And it just happens like that, you know? Like, they had some really great things happening, like, about a month ago with Eric Young. Eric Young was a fighting champion, and there's a lot of backlash about the fact that Eric Young was an absolute comedy geek, and he won the championship. But they just started doing something really good with Eric Young. He was a fighting champion. He was defending the world championship every week. Now, some may say for the long term, well, it's going to kill your World Heavyweight Championship matches at your big events. Okay, that may be true, but, you know, TNA's in a situation where let's just try something and see if it works, you know? And they really were doing something very, very good, but then they just turned MVP heel. Like, talk about just not being patient with things. The best things in pro wrestling take time, patience, pay off over the long term. You know, like, I think that's what worked well with the Triple H heel turn in recent memory with Daniel Bryan. You know, he was a babyface for a long, long, long time, and we got used to him as a babyface, and then he turned heel, and it was a big turn, and there was a big explanation for it, and then they just ran with it. MVP's been a babyface, and has only been with TNA for, like, what, 2-3 months? Like, and then we're meant to think, oh, this is a long, drawn-out plan. Come on. You know, let us emotionally invest in MVP and then turn him heel. And the same thing with Eric Young. Let's have Eric Young be a fighting champion for a long, long time. And then we have MVP turn on him for jealousy reasons, for all this stuff. You know, I don't care if he was part of the plan and all this stuff. You know, like, they're losing focus all the time on all these shows. MVP's great on the mic. He's a really, you know, he's very easy to talk, easy to listen to. Very articulate, but he was on like 4 or 5 segments, including backstage segments. Too much of a good talker is just going to turn the fans off the talker. I felt that kind of way with Bray Wyatt by midway through this week. I was finding that we're hearing too much of Bray Wyatt. It's a bit too much of Bray Wyatt to the point where I'm done with talking, hearing him talk. That's a good thing about SmackDown this week. We didn't hear a Bray Wyatt talk. We just had him wrestle. I think that's very, very good. You know, you use your good talkers sparingly, make us want to hear from them again. MVP, way too much. I heard him way too much. I was in long talking segments. That's another thing with TNA. They've got to just concise those talking segments. Have a few, maybe one or two long segments, and that's it. More wrestling. But we heard too much of MVP this week, that's for sure. Bully Ray, God bless his soul, he's trying his hardest by making us care about what he's involved in. The Dixie storyline, it's been convoluted. It's been stupid if you followed it. If you haven't followed it, I don't even know. Actually, to be honest, I'm not even going to waste time trying to explain it. Long story short, Dixie's a heel. Bully's a babyface. And Bully Ray's trying to do what he was trying to do to Trish Stratus back in 2000. He's trying to put Dixie's card up through the table. Like, that's such a Russo-ific idea and such a Russo-ific kind of mentality. He's back, I think, guys, girls. I think he's back in TNA. But come on, guys. has to use some creative storylines instead of just rehashing old WWE ones, you know? But god damn it, Bully Ray's trying with what he's got. He's really, really trying with what he's got. So, God bless him. He's good promos, but, you know, again, there's too many talking segments. I got a bit sick of it. Spud, god damn it, Rockstar Spud's awesome. He's been the best, probably the best thing coming out of TNA Impact for a long time now. He's been so good. He's so funny. He's got great suits. He's really got great comedic timing. He, like, shits all over Santino Marella of WWE. Really, really does. Love his work. I hope when TNA, or if TNA folds, he can go to WWE and make something of it, because I think he's really got something. I think he's actually an all right wrestler, too. If you guys haven't, if you guys didn't watch TNA British Boot Camp, they did a British Boot Camp, 2 years ago? A year ago? That was actually really, really good production from TNA. They did it like a Jeremy Borash, I think, produced it and hosted it. It's really, really good. British wrestlers coming to the forefront and trying to compete to become the next TNA superstar. Really, really good. And Rockstar Spud won it, actually. And here he is on TNA programming, being the best thing on TNA sometimes. So, I like Bram, the British wrestler Bram. I think he's got a really good look. He's kind of like a discount Luke Harper. He's got that kind of crazy look. Got a good talk. Got a really good promo set of skills there. Wrestling ability, I mean, we didn't really see very much this week. I think he wrestled Tigre Uno. I mean, it was a squash match. We didn't really see very much out of him. But yeah, I really like his, he's got a lot of upside, that guy. Very much like Gunner. I'll just say this about TNA. TNA has got a ton of great talent. Bobby Roode, James Storm, Gunner, Bully Ray, Kenny King, MVP, Eric Young. They've got some great wrestlers. Kurt Angle. You know, they've got some great wrestlers that had great wrestlers come through that door, but never, ever have they gained great success, really, really great success, or have they built someone new from the ground up. You know, the writing's on the wall in that regard when it comes to TNA. Finally, the menagerie. Have you guys all heard about the menagerie, this ridiculous circus carny act they've got going on? Jesus Christ. What the hell? These long, drawn-out entrances with no crowd reaction. Crowd just shits all over the angle, doesn't say anything. It looks so bad. And they keep pushing it. I tell you what, TNA, Dixie Carter, who's taking care of creative? God, you got to kick things into gear and stop going back to the well with all the same storyline ideas. Nobody really wants to see heel authority figures anymore. No one wants to see heel factions. Let's just have individual programs. I don't care if Samoa Joe came back. Samoa Joe came back this week, everybody. Is it going to make a difference? With this kind of creative? No. They've got to step their game up again. Don't rely on stupid, funny gimmicks that may sound good on paper, but lack in execution. They don't have time for that. Cut it. Work on something realistic. Try and differentiate from WWE. I don't know. We'll cover TNA Impact next week. Touchwood maybe a better show. I hope so. I want it to succeed. I want to get TNA back to what it was in 2012. But we will see. Doesn't look good. All right, guys, the match of the week. What do we think the match of the week is? There was a ton of good matches this week. I knew this even before we watched WWE this week. I knew there was going to be matches great all up and down the card. So this starting for number 3, Sheamus versus Bad News Barrett. Really good physical match from SmackDown. It really surprised me too. I knew it was going to be good, but I really, really enjoyed that match. Really well built. Physical. Just, I love physical. Then like something about the international wrestlers. They just get together and they just brawl. And that's why I'm looking forward to Sheamus and Cesaro on Sunday at Payback. That should be really good. Adrian Neville versus Tyson Kidd comes in at number 2, the NXT Championship. I thought this was going to be the match of the week, to be honest. It really had some great stuff. I found myself cheering. But, you know, it's the crowd reaction just wasn't there. And that is the intangible about wrestling matches. You've got a hot crowd, plus good action in the ring. It can be magical. And I'll still give matches props when you don't have good crowd reactions. Like, it works both ways, but Neville versus Kidd is number 2, and number 1 is of an obvious one. It's Charlotte versus Natalya, NXT Women's Championship match. Talk about overachieving. guys, girls, Divas Wrestling on a national scale? Is it back? I think so. We've got some great matches coming up, got some great talent coming up through the ranks. Charlotte, my God, she's a Flair, Charlotte Flair, she's Ric Flair's daughter. Tell you what, that girl has an amazing, amazing upside. Incredibly athletic. Put that together with just the mind, the wrestling mind of Natalya, the heritage of Natalya, heritage of Flair. Great match, great story, great post-match too. Flair crying, you know, God bless Ric Flair. He's gone through so much, poor guy. But, you know, good scene, you know. It's kind of funny because Charlotte was a heel in this match, and here she is, you know, like father's crying. You can't help but sympathize with Flair. Lost his son Reed last year. That's tragic. So it was good to see that. Really great match. Honorable mentions this week: Sami Zayn versus Tyler Breeze. Really, really good match. Great, really well put together. And Orton and Batista versus the Rose family. Another really, really great match. So check all those matches out if you have time. I know we've got busy lifestyle schedules, but hey, it only takes a few minutes to check out some great, great wrestling action for this week. Now, guys, this show is going to talk about podcasts, wrestling podcasts that happen during the week, because I have been finding more and more that it's more important to listen to these podcasts than go to these pro wrestling news websites, you know, PW Mania, Bleacher Report, and all these writers taking information from secondary, third, fourth, fifth, sixth sources, and by the time you get it, you don't even know if it's true or not. Stone Cold Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, and Jim Ross have their own podcasts. They have their own points of view, they interview guys, and they get the sources and the information from the people themselves. And I tell you what, the shows are incredible. Jim Ross's show in particular is just an awesome, awesome show. Worth checking out. At the start of the show, he goes, "What's on my mind?" He talks about WWE, he talks about TNA, he talks about Ring of Honor, and he gives the fans, the wrestling fans, his points of view. It's incredible. It's great. And, you know, who doesn't have respect for Jim Ross? If you don't have respect for Jim Ross, I'm a huge mark for Jim Ross, as most people are. You can get the hell out. Like, Jim Ross is, like, the be-all and end-all for this industry. I started following wrestling for three reasons. Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, and Jim Ross when I was a child. And that still remains true to this day, you know? Awesome. And then when he interviews the guys, he actually asks them questions that fans have asked, that fans want to know. What's your opinion on CM Punk leaving? You know, like, what do you think about WWE's philosophy about big guys? Do you think it still exists? Blah, blah, blah. And ask, you know, Shawn Michaels, Austin, Big Show, Goldberg. Goldberg's up there. That's very interesting. Jericho is much more like trying to blend his own music career with what he's doing in the wrestling, but it's still very entertaining. He's a very entertaining guy. He has a really great interview with Daniel Bryan that happened last week. It's a two-parter. Part one was last week. A great interview. Really candid interview talking about the length of matches and how that affects the wrestling style. That's good. Steve Austin show. All these shows, by the way, are on podcast1.com. Check them out. Download the podcast app on your iPhone, and you can just search Steve Austin Show, Talk is Jericho, or The Ross Report, and they're all up there. Austin Show, very much just about like what Austin's up to. Very much more casual. I mean, I think Austin's been in the game longest out of all of them, so I think he's kind of just easing back from the wrestling a little bit. But this week, let's talk about this week's shows. Austin interviewed Liam White, better known as Big Van Vader. If you don't know who Vader is, he was one of the best big men of the pro wrestling industry. He's one of the best big men. Next to Bam Bam Bigelow, obviously this Japanese wrestler that I don't know about, but Vader to me, personally, one of the greatest big men of all time. There's a lot of little interesting points. Like, you know, Vader found it very hard to turn off his character when the camera stopped rolling. I think it's such an unheard of philosophy now. In 2014, you know, like back then, those wrestling characters, it's hard to differentiate between the real person and the wrestling person. I think that's incredible. You don't see that these days. So, you know, very, very interesting. He talks about life in Japan, and, like, back in Japan, you know, if you join, like, a dojo, or if you join, like, a pro wrestling training camp or whatever, you know, you live there, you wash your own clothes, you do your daily chores, you work as a team, that idea of hard work and how it pays off. Really, really different kind of a mentality of how you train wrestlers. And then you talked about the round system in Germany. Now, the German system of wrestling is completely different from American wrestling, Japanese wrestling, and how I think there's four or five minute rounds, I think, or something like that, and how, like, there'll be a referee and there'll be fan, like that, so there'll be fines and that they're given to the wrestlers. It creates this all different mode of drama, and, like, you know, heels trying to beat the round by, like, you know, doing things behind the ref's back and trying to force a fine for the babyface and all that kind of stuff. It was very interesting, kind of, and how Leon Vader kind of suggested bringing that back into WWE these days, and how they should at least have, like, maybe one of those matches like that. That would be different. What do you think? I think that would be kind of different from the usual tread of matches that you see out there. And it's really interesting because Vader is very much well known for his rough and tough style. And it was very interesting because Austin was like, where did that come from? You know, where did the rough and tough style came from? Big Van Vader was trained by, wrestled people like Stan Hansen, Bruiser Brody when he first started wrestling. And if anyone knows anything about Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody, they had ridiculously stiff styles of wrestling. So, of course, Vader, as a rookie, grew up just thinking the stiff style was the style. So, I mean, you should tell Mick Foley that. If anyone knows anything about Mick Foley and Vader's relationship, there was an infamous match in Germany where Vader tore off Mick Foley's ear. And then there was another match in WCW where Mick Foley got his teeth beaten in by Vader. Yeah, very brutal stuff, but very much worth checking out on the Steve Austin Show with Big Van Vader. The other one I've noticed was Bully Ray, TNA's Bully Ray, was actually getting interviewed by Chris Jericho on Talking Jericho this week. I only listened to part one, but this part two is already up on the site. You can download that now. Very interesting, just chats about psychology and how, you know, he's run with Hulk Hogan and how that was very influential and how he was very fond of Hulk and how it really meant a lot for his career. You know, like, Jericho asked about his transition from, like, being a tag team wrestler to a singles wrestler and how he made that successful, so that was very, very interesting. You know, it's kind of funny that Pat Patterson, Vince McMahon, Paul Heyman were the three most influential people in Bully Ray's mind, which is, I think, a fair call. Pat Patterson, a lot, if you don't know, the first ever Intercontinental Champion in WWE, tired now, but he used to be Vince McMahon's right-hand man for putting matches together. And he worked with the best of the best, and I think he's one of the most respected people in WWE and in the industry, so it's very interesting. It wasn't interesting, but it was very good to hear Bully Ray give Pat Patterson his props. Put over Bobby Roode in WWE, in TNA. Yeah, Bobby Roode is... He is like... JBL always says, you know, if you build a wrestler from the ground up, he'd look like Randy Orton. Well, if you build a wrestler from the ground up, he'd look like Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode is great in TNA. Just a really great Canadian wrestler. He put over Paul Heyman, of course. Paul Heyman and Bully Ray's relationship goes all the way back to ECW's days, so it's good to hear a few stories about Paul Heyman, and really great hearing Bully Ray just put over Heyman's masterful promo post the departure of CM Punk from the WWE. If you all remember, Raw was going to Chicago leading up to WrestleMania. Paul Heyman had the ridiculous task of trying to defuse the Chicago fans and make them more interested in Punk, Lesnar and Taker, than Punk not being at the show. And by God, Paul Heyman did it. Check out his promos, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't checked it out already. Paul Heyman is a god in my eyes. And there was also a very gripping conversation about Bully Ray's TLC match in Las Vegas in 2002, I don't know if you guys remember that. There was a it was the first ever Raw Roulette. Raw Roulette, where the match stipulations were decided by the Raw, the Vegas wheel. Well, the first ever one had a 10-man TLC match, and there was a spot where Jericho actually delivered a bulldog off the ladder onto Bully Ray, onto the ground, and actually concussed Bully Ray. He was completely out, and there was some really good, interesting conversation about that. So, guys, long story short about the podcast, check out the podcast, because there's some really great information and insight about the industry, about the pro wrestlers themselves, about how they came into the industry. Don't listen to pro wrestling dirt sheet sites. Go to these podcasts. It's the best way of getting the information out there. So we'll be reviewing the shows that I feel are the most interesting every week. So look forward to that next week. Guys, we're almost out of time, but we're going to be talking about two matches that I saw during the week. Now, there's a lot to watch, but I think that, there's so much content on WWE programming these days, you kind of forget about these really great gems of matches that happen, and you forget about them. But they're really great matches. So I'm going to have a From the Vault. We're going to go into the vault every week, and we're going to pull out two matches that I've watched during the week that I think you guys should watch too. So the two matches that I've watched are Edge versus Chris Benoit, from Backlash in 2005, in a Last Man Standing match. You know, kind of fitting in with the theme of John Cena and Bray Wyatt this Sunday at Payback. Well, I'll bring up a Last Man Standing match that I thought was fantastic. Yeah. And also, Kenta Kobashi, the infamous Kenta Kobashi from New Japan, versus Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, from Pro Wrestling Noah in 2006. So let's just talk about Edge versus Chris Benoit first. Now, if you feel uncomfortable about the fact that I'm bringing Chris Benoit up, I totally respect your opinion. If you want to turn off the podcast now, that's your prerogative. That's fine. But I always try to remember Chris Benoit, the great wrestler, the technical wrestler, because at the end of the day, what he did was horrible. I'm not going to get into a political discussion about it, but Chris Benoit, the wrestler, you can't deny he's amazing. In between those ropes. And the match he had with Edge in this Last Man Standing match makes you miss the intensity that Chris Benoit brought to his wrestling matches. This match from the get-go was just chop city, just getting into Edge's face. If you remember the backstory, Edge had just won the Money in the Bank match at WrestleMania 21, and I think he screwed Chris Benoit in the match and cost him the Money in the Bank. So WWE continued that storyline, broke it off, and made a Last Man Standing match about it. I tell you what, in this day and age, the Money in the Bank winners, they just get screwed. This mentality is that, well, they've got the World Heavyweight Championship match, they can lose, we can give other people wins over them, and somehow someone else gets a rub. But it's not the way it works. That contender needs to be strong by the time he cashes it in, unless he's a Damien Sandow. You know, even that I'm not really a fan of. But, this match was a great example of how to put over your Money in the Bank winner following them winning the contract. Edge got put over so strong in this match. He busted Chris Benoit open. He speared Chris Benoit twice. He just completely killed him. Benoit, the gutsy challenger, kept coming back and coming back. And in the end, the dick Edge pulls out a brick from his briefcase, the Money in the Bank briefcase, and just cracks Benoit over the head with it and wins the match. Awesome, awesome match. Physical. There's a bit of plunder in there as well. Ladder, some kendo sticks. Just a really well-built match. Great match. And Edge, Adam Copeland, we miss you, buddy. What a great competitor, too. I just focused on Benoit there. But Edge, all the way through the match, just is such an unlikable heel. And Benoit played a great, resilient baby face, but succumbed to the disgusting heel in the end. So, guys, check that match out. Edge versus Chris Benoit, Backlash 2005, in a Last Man Standing match. So the final match is Kenta Kobashi and Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon. Now, Kenta Kobashi, considered by many, and considered by Wrestling Observer's newsletter, I think he was Wrestler of the Year, 4 or 5 years running, Kenta Kobashi, just an amazing physical specimen. Just slick, agile, fast, great technical wrestler. put him in the ring with Bryan Danielson, who I think at 2006 was considered one of the greatest wrestlers. So it was the two greatest wrestlers at the time wrestling each other. This match, I'm not exactly sure the backstory. I don't know where it's led to, but that's the great thing about these Japanese matches. You don't need the backstory. It's just wrestling matches. Physical, hard-hitting wrestling matches. Now, the Japanese wrestling style kind of gets a bit of a because, you know, oh, there's too many shots to the head, there's no psychology. I kind of disagree. I mean, there are matches like that in Ring of Honor that's kind of adapted that style, that there's way too many shots to the head. Good example of that from Ring of Honor. I was in New York for the Ring of Honor Hammerstein Ballroom show leading up to WrestleMania 29, so last year. And there was a great match between the Wolves versus Bobby Fish or Kyle O'Reilly. I think that's it. Yeah, and there was, for the tag titles, there was way too many shots in the head. But the crowd was going ballistic, and that took me out of the match. This match was just psychology integrated to the max. Is the best way to describe it. It was so well done. Both guys, they were given 40 minutes. You wouldn't even think 40 minutes had elapsed. It was an incredible performance. Competitive story. Really, like you really felt they were really fighting, like, you know, like a sports, like, you know. And I think that's kind of missing from WWE. I wish they kind of incorporated a bit more of a sports mentality, you know. As if the industry wouldn't benefit from that, you know. If it feels more real, people are going to flock to it, I think. That's just me. The one thing you take out of this is, like, Daniel Bryan has such an amazing submission skill. Like, he's just incredible. He's pulling out, you know, these Indian death locks, turning into a, like, you know, scorpion cross lock. So, yes, Paige, I have seen your scorpion cross lock, and I've actually seen Bryan Danielson use it. So, there you go. And Bryan Danielson selling in these submission holds. When he gets one put on him, STS, like, my God, you can't help but, like, get behind Daniel Bryan. And he's breathing heavily, and he's getting up slowly, and he's screaming, and he's yelling. And it's just like, there's no denying why Daniel Bryan is at the top of his game and is the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. He deserves to be there. He's an incredible physical specimen, an incredible wrestler. This match, I think Kendo Kobashi wins it in the end. But guys, check it out. Google, again, I found all these matches on YouTube. Kendo Kobashi versus Bryan Danielson, Pro Wrestling NOAH 2006, Edge versus Chris Benoit, Backlash 2005, and a Last Man Standing match. They're all up there for you guys to watch. So do check those matches out. Guys, if you just check those two matches out and check out the matches I told you about before, my top three matches of the week, you guys will be happy wrestling fans. Really good week for wrestling, by the way. So that's all we have time for today. God, that time went very, very quickly. Thank you so much for listening live, or thank you so much for hitting that download button wherever you may be in Pro Wrestling Radio Land. If you like what you've heard or you want to give me a serious piece of your mind, remember to send your feedback to @WrestlingRBreak, capital W, capital R, capital B on Twitter. It will help me give you what you need at the end of your working week. Once again, thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next week for another Wrestling Week that was. Good night, everybody.